IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 51 of the Killing It Podcast. So, everybody's at home. I guess we will be for a while.
And I think we all will be for a while.
So wild speculation, Sarah. So.
I know. I make no predictions at all on how long. Just the element of like, hey, world, you got three guys that are pretty good at talking to it remotely. If you need us, we're here.
But I will say that I saw two colleagues online, folks from around the industry today, complaining about the slow response or the down websites from airline companies. They were like, dang it, your website's down, I can't book a flight. And I was like, you've heard that, like, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic thing? priorities, folks, priorities.
Exactly. Plus, big companies are smarter than I was, certainly, when I started having my first downturn in my business. They lay people off right away, right? They're not losing money because they got too many people sitting around, you know, doing stuff.
Yeah, so. they're not kidding about it. But I mean, again, there will be a future, and those businesses will absolutely come back. We don't want people going into our program thinking doom and gloom. What we're going to say is, let's be realistic. Let's be sober adults and have a practical conversation. But we will also observe, shit's crazy out there now.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit later. So, but
exactly, that's Carl, topic two.
Before you kick us off,
yes,
I need to issue a clarification sort of slash correction based on a statement from last week. And I want to start with thank you to listener Chris Wanga, who called me out on Twitter because I said the CDC had not been hacked. And he, and we'll include the link, the CDC did have a virus infection in 2007. It is based on the reporting from 2007. I think it is fair to say it is unclear if there was a data leak, but my interpretation is there was not. And so I made the statement of, hey, the CDC's never been hacked. I think it's solid to say, like, that's potentially debatable. Chris and I agreed on Twitter that I should be clearer. And my intention was data leak in my thinking of the use of the word hack. So I'm going to be more clear on that, or do my best. And thank you for keeping us to task. I think that's important. I think my core point still stands. I think the idea that I was trying to make was that an investment in government services is not 100% wasteful. And particularly as the culture of right now, I'm willing to stand by the CDC. And by the way, so was Chris. So Chris, thank you for calling us out. And if anybody ever wants to take us to task, please do, because I love it.
Right. So we are big on transparency here. So I think maybe it was last time or the time before, Ryan mentioned just very casually, we might be wrong. And I'm like, wait, don't say that shit, right? But the truth is, this is mostly opinion. So, you know, where we state something as a fact, it should be a fact, you know. But
oh, totally. And by the way,
the world is up for interpretation.
And we keep saying that this is a conversation and we're in engaging it. And so I welcome the commentary and the debate, and because that's the whole point. So I'm on board. I was happy. I didn't want to be wrong, but I'm glad I'm glad to be held to task.
Right. All I gotta say is, what? Ethics in journalism? What?
What?
Well, I don't want to be called a journalist, so let's move on.
You know
on
what? From that. Well, then I will, because I'm getting comfortable with the journalist title now, and I will transition us into our first topic of the day, because on when this episode comes out, it would be Monday of last week, so the beginning, you know, Monday the 9th. I released an interview on the Business of Tech podcast, a extended episode of which was an interview with the Louisiana Secretary of State, Kyle Ardoin, who's the one who'd had a bunch of choice words for managed services providers and for the community at large. And among the highlights, I would encourage everybody, and we've included the link in the show notes, if you haven't listened to the interview, I consider it must listen. I think it's incredibly important for anybody delivering technology services, defines themselves as a managed services provider or a managed security services provider. I think you need to listen to this. But to pull out a couple of highlights for you, he specifically cited a couple of things. The first was that if you are delivering what he called basic IT, meaning patch management and viruses and backup, he goes, if you're not having conversations about a complete security package, he says it's malpractice. And that was so there's that. He additionally said that if the industry doesn't have, if self-regulation doesn't work, the government will step in. And I think it's important to note that he is a Republican and a pro-business Republican saying that. So this is not an ideological thing. This is somebody coming in saying this is where it is clearly needed. And the last statement was he's introducing legislation asking for the registration, definition, and then registration of MSPs and MSSPs. So I wanted to throw it to my two co-hosts and go, so gents, reactions?
Well, I got to say, my first reaction is, you know, aside from the fact that we saw this coming more than a month ago, and actually, you know, it only came fully to fruition because of Dave, but as quickly as it did. But my first reaction was, this is kind of good news in the sense that I look at HIPAA, and to me, HIPAA is a fuster cluck, right? HIPAA doesn't actually define who is a business associate, but it holds you accountable, and there's no nice definition, so you can't train people on it. And how you get punished, you just got to look and see how it's being enforced by the various agencies. It is a disaster. And if we're going to be regulated, it should be rational. It should be very clear. We kind of started this podcast questioning whether the term managed service provider is useful. And a year later, here's somebody who wants to define it in legislation. And whatever they come up with, I promise you, every state will look at it. They might be different, but they will look at it. And it begins from there.
See, I was checking notes from previous shows that we've had. I'm counting. It's about 8 months ago now, the first time that we said, if you are managing technology but not also managing the security of that technology, that is business malpractice. That's a word that I have used repeatedly. It is fantastic to hear other grown-ups in the public conversation using that terminology. I think it couldn't be more tangible for the people in our industry, right? On one hand, we want to say to the world, we are real, we are meaningful, we are mission critical. And on the other hand, we want to say, leave us alone, no definition, no regulations, you can't control anything that we do. I was at an event a year or so ago where people were having a big emotional conversation about lawyers need to be licensed and regulated, and doctors need to be licensed and regulated, but the government shouldn't be putting licensing and other restrictions on technology service providers. I will agree with you, as long as what you do is not actually material or mission critical to the customers you serve. If what you do is peripheral, casual, optional, nobody should be doing that. It's kind of like doing my eyebrows or my nails or cutting my hair. You know what? There are health regulations in their industry, but when it comes to the substance of what they do for their work, there are no regulations because it's optional. If what you do is not optional, if you believe what you do is actually critical, then you need to do it well and to a standard. And you know what? I feel the winds of regulation coming, and we've been through this. All three of us have been around for waves of government regulation. I have yet to see them get one right, but that does not mean they will not do it.
Right.
So I want to throw the statement that I've been thinking about on this, because I've been researching it. So again, I'm in the journalist hat. Like, this is an opinion. This is a talking head opinion, not research. But I tend to look at this from the two clusters of communities that I like to compare against. If you compare against the medical community or the legal community or the accounting community, right? So these areas where it's doctors, lawyers, accountants, they all have a certification or a test or something that is industry driven, but legally enforced at some level. Like that's the analogy. And I've always wanted our industry to be in that breath. Like if you think about the CFO, this is likely someone with an accounting background who probably can professionally practice it. And we have an industry-driven metric that is then legally enforced. You can also look at another world. You can look at plumbers, auto repair shops. You can look at service industries that also have certifications, but do not require a certification to operate. Now, when I look at those two worlds, one gets paid incredibly well and one does not. And I, as a general rule, now there are exceptions to this, right? There are distinctly specializations and there are exceptions on either side. There's low-end medical and there's super high-end car repair. So I do not mean to disparage a field. I'm just trying to look for a trend. And right. So from my perspective, I would rather be in that first one. That then means that you are engaging with government at some level in order to leverage that, or you go it alone. And from my perspective, that is less profitable.
Well, so two thoughts. First of all, I got to say, at least in the state of California, if you're a plumber, if you're a roofer, if you're a landscaper, you have to go to the state contractor's license board and you have to get a license. And there are limits on when you have to engage somebody. If it's over X number of dollars, they have to have a contractor's license for them to do work in your house.
Right.
And my second thought is I have long advocated that we need to be more professional, that there needs to be some kind of agreed upon certification. It can't come from Cisco. It can't come from Microsoft, right? You know, an actual certification that says, look, technology is no longer something, as Ryan says, that's optional, right? If you say that, you know, we want to flirt with the idea that the internet and the cloud is a right, is something that is so fundamental to operating in business today that you have to have it, well, then the people who fix that should be licensed and regulated. Now, I'm also on the conservative side. So I'm not a big fan of regulation and you know, yeah. I think the government does get it wrong the first time, every time, but it's coming. It has to happen. And in terms of professionalism, I kind of like the idea that I don't want to pay $1,000 a year, but I pay something and I get a little thing that says I am licensed to actually do
it. So let me clarify a little bit where my example is in my head, in that you would hire a handyman to work on your house, but I don't believe you'd hire a handyman to work on your flu or to work on your set of surgery, right?
Right.
That's where my thinking is. So to be clear, because I completely want to acknowledge licensing, bonding, regulation. I'm just observing that there are situations where the fields allow for that more unregulated.
Well, and that is an appropriate analogy, because what we have often said is if you run your business like a business, it creates credibility, it creates professionalism, which creates the opportunity for premium pricing. Yes, it is a burden, but it is a burden in the best interest of both the customer and the provider. And I will tell you again, it's going to happen. It's not about whether or not any of us likes the idea. It's coming. The question is, can you thrive in that environment?
Great last word. Sadly, we're going to have to come back to this topic. And I hope you've learned by now, when we promise we're coming back to a topic, we're coming back to that
topic. I hope that one sparks tweet. I mean, I hope that one sparks tweets in social. I want to hear from people where their heads are at on this, because by the way, we're saying this over and over, the industry has to come on this. So hit us up, people.
and to be honest, if there's going to be legislation, it's going to be an open period for people to have discussion about that. So topic two, and I actually did a live stream last Wednesday, about, look, you know, one of the things that is whether it's a recession or not, there's going to be an economic effect to all of what's going on right now, and it's going to echo around the globe for probably 3, 6, 9 months. Nobody knows, but there will be an effect, and you need to have some response to that.
I think that's totally fair. And I think and you kind of laugh and go, this is one of those bits where, like, we're not doing a news podcast. We know you guys might not be listening to the real time. So we're not going to report on particular incidents, but we have to talk about the COVID-19 and the coronavirus and the impact. And I think where my head's on the audit for this discussion is the, look, I'm looking to organizations to be great community leaders. Like, I think that's the opportunity here. And I have slammed a bunch of big tech companies a lot recently, and I think deservedly so for a lot of their mishandling. But where I will say is I will observe that a lot of these companies are doing a fantastic job of being leaders in their community. I want to call it Microsoft, Amazon, Google, all with moves where they are, you know, investing in their workers, you know, accommodating for hourly workers. The NBA and NHL, they were recording, suspended their seasons. Mark Cuban coming out saying that his number one concern was to think about the safety of his fans and then his employees, and thinking about how he's going to handle, he didn't have specifics, but he said, I'm going to work on emergency funds for hourly workers and to think about those responses. And I'd cited on my Facebook page, I mean, it's just a little thing, but the local promoter canceled a bunch of events locally, but said, you know what, we're going to work with all your fans. We're going to reschedule everything. We're going to make sure everybody's covered. And I just really, I think this is an opportunity for leadership. And I think that that's and you and your local level can do it. I've seen a couple of channel moves that have been really fantastic. Soxter is investing in offering, you know, free their package, their EDR package for 60 days to support people that haven't done remote working before so that they can get an agent deployed because they know there might be an incident there. And I just look and go, these are all opportunities for leadership. And first off, I want to hear what people are doing, but also just be like, this is a great chance to do right by your local community.
Well, it is. And yet I think, you know, where you took it right there at the end is the important pivot into the local application. Yes, this is different. Yes, it is challenging and often, in fact, terrifying. We understand that this is a hard situation, but that does not mean the same as you cannot do business. You must do business differently. You must seek opportunities in the confusion, and there is a way forward, right? There are remote workers. We've seen a lot of businesses say work from home and there's going to be impact and we're going to still take care of our hourly workers. But again, please, everybody listening to this who happens to be working in the technology industry for a living, please make sure that all these remote workers have a VPN. Please make sure that they understand basic hygiene and security on their at-home devices and document sharing and the protection of corporate information and everything, right? Like, that's the first thing. That sounds like a business opportunity. We're not here to take advantage. We are here to say the world moved, the market changed. You either get left behind as a Darwin victim or you get to come along and thrive in the new world. What will you do in this situation to change your business to make sure that it can continue to thrive going forward? If all you're going to do is complain about the things that have been canceled or the things that are different, that's dinosaur behavior. If what you are doing is to say, I admit it, I don't like it, but I recognize the reality of our situation. Is this going to be hard? Right. My catchphrase in this is, you know, we have a recession every now and then, right? Stuff happens. The economy goes up by two, up by two, up by, and then it goes down by two or four or six. But you know what? While down four is not a good thing for anybody's economic projections, down four is still the same as 96% the same. right? Like it's just because the economy is contracting is not the same as there's absolutely no way to get paid. There are, and you need to be diligent and proactive, be creative, but be an ally to your customers and to your people, and they will respect the opportunity that you're pursuing, not feel like you're just here to take advantage.
I think we should acknowledge the fact that in technology, we kind of have an advantage over everybody else, right? In the sense that, first of all, we have figured out the remote thing a long time ago, some of us 20 years ago. Most of us have figured out the secure remote operation. So now we need to make sure that we engage our clients. This is an opportunity for us to go to our clients and say, don't just send people home and let them RDP in an unsecure line. Let us help you. Let us set that up. Because if people go home and then suddenly they're putting their stuff on Dropbox and their personal this account and their Google Drive, and like your entire business becomes a sieve. We can't have that. And you have to engage your clients now and say, don't just do this. Let me help you do it the right way, the secure way. I don't know anything about sports. It's not my deal, but I know that they don't have the ability to simply pivot to online conferences the way we do. Right.
Oh, sure. Sorry.
So they're going to have to figure out, like, do they like invest in these online games to do at the same time? You know, how do they make those, their broadcasts interesting? They have a tougher challenge than we do. Virtually every conference I know, you go to that ZDNet page, it doesn't say canceled. Almost everyone says gone online, gone to remote,
or postpone where they're rescheduled.
Yeah.
You know, and my other thought is like it's not just an opportunity to lead. I think you know there's also that. I mean, first off, take the opportunity to lead. Like that's my first bit. You know, if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to take the risk on that, certainly don't be the one whose comments don't age well. Think about the way that, you know, if you're not, I get it, I don't agree, but if you're not quite on the same way, if you think that if you're the one shaking your fist at the sky saying this is all overreaction, look at it from this perspective. You might be right in a couple of months, but heaven forbid you're truly wrong. Don't be the one whose comments don't age well. Just remember that.
See, and one other thing that I will say, you know, again, every few years we have a business challenge in our community and people either shrink from it or rise to it. You know, the cliche is some of the most valuable and powerful businesses in our community were founded during a recession. It is possible to grow a business at times of stress and risk if you're thinking carefully and you're actually doing things that matter. I long said 1,000 times, there's more than enough cool technology to sell. There's more than enough meaningful improvement and impact we can make on our customers' businesses. Now is not the time to go away and hide in a hole. Now is the time to say, how can we use technology to address this in a positive way?
Yep.
All righty then. So let's switch to yet another topic that is much more in line with what our show started out to be.
We're really trying, people, we swear.
Which is, you know, the question of, are robots taking all of your jobs? Well, no, they're taking your boss's job.
This article was striking to me, so I'll quickly summarize for those. We've included the link in the show notes. I do encourage you to take a look. The Verge did a really cool piece on this. And what it is it's around the idea of that Carl's exactly right, that automation isn't necessarily taking factory workers, industrial workers, warehouse workers, call centers, individuals' jobs. It's taking the boss's job in terms of managing these people or applying metrics and systems to them. And you know, the tagline, you know, in warehouses, call centers, and other sectors, intelligent machines are managing humans, and they're making work more stressful, grueling, and dangerous. You know, when the machine is making decisions about housekeepers and how quickly they're supposed to move, or they're working on how quickly a call center person has to call, or how a warehouse worker has to respond, And they are not interpreting you may have a bad day, or you are, you know, you've had an issue at home, or you might be getting sick. No, the machine just says your output is this, and it is aggressive and harsh.
And sometimes you can get fired automatically. Like that's Black Mirror stuff, right?
That is exactly what it is. And I will say, it's not just coming. It's here, right?
It's like here.
We, among others, have had harsh words about the working conditions at Amazon and about the way that the phenomenon of warehouse employment replacing a lot of white-collar jobs, right? Like, that's a thing that's been going on in our industry. I will tell you, it's not because there's like a guy in each warehouse at Amazon saying, you're not running hard enough. It's because there's an algorithm measuring your productivity and accommodating for all of the local conditions. And either you meet the condition or you don't meet the condition. And Amazon has simply taken the business decision to use the algorithm's output as gospel, as the determining factor in what a lot of things are going on. The consequences have impact on safety, on stress, on worker satisfaction. There are many real world things that are coming here, but I will say, to kind of take this premise and expand it just a little bit, it's not just coming to the Amazon warehouse, right? This is coming to literally every industry and every business that you can imagine. Restaurants will be impacted, hotels will be impacted, grocery stores will be impacted, because everybody is obsessed with the idea of optimizing productivity. Well, in a machine world, the concept of optimization is a fine idea. I buy it from an engineer's point of view. We want to eliminate all the extraneous to get down to the essence of only what is absolutely necessary for productivity. In a human world, I assure you that there are many days when I am less than optimal. Whether it's I'm tired or I'm distracted or I'm busy or whatever, humans, no matter how much we use the marketing buzz terminology, we are not optimal. And if we try to impose that standard on work productivity, it's not just going to be like a long-term annoying factor for employees. This is going to have fast and immediate implications for, statistics here say 50% of us are less than average in terms of productivity. And that 50% is going to have a little bit of a hard time when there are no...
Well, you have to laugh and go, that's the very definition of average, right? Exactly. Somebody has to be in the middle, meaning half is less.
All the children can't be above average. So.
Exactly.
It's also the case, we have to acknowledge that we're at an interim step, because the next thing is you have to inject into the AI, oh, and by the way, you have humans. You know, think about the supply chain. Optimizing every piece of the supply chain works really great on paper as long as the supply chain is fully operational. Throw in a little virus, send it around the world, and suddenly you have no reliability anywhere in your supply chain, right? Well,
yeah,
so you do need to say, okay, we actually deal with human beings here.
But let me make this quickly concrete for a lot of our world. How about people that are billing, that are worrying about all of the time tracked against tickets and the SLA delivery and the way that all is done in your services practice?
Are you the robot? So, well, so think about the analogy, Dave, to Uber and Lyft.
Right.
Now, Uber and Lyft basically are seeding the AI with what all the routes are and what the times that people need to be from here to there. And if you were going to eliminate the drivers and just had driverless cars, where would you put them and where would you start and what time of day would you have them in each of these positions? They're literally seeding that data. Think about now moving that to the world of ticketing and service delivery.
Oh, sure.
You could theoretically have a robot running your service department more efficiently than that pesky human service manager.
It's so true.
Again, I will say it's not might, it's absolutely positively will. The question is, what do you put the highest value on? Is it one more unit of work output, or is it people who are happy and satisfied? And again, there's been a big conversation going on around all industries about CX, customer experience, right? Like, we need to invest in technology and in systems, people and resources to ensure that our customers have the very best experience with us possible. Well, you know what function of business actually causes customer experience? Employees. Therefore, cause and effect say employee experience might actually be more important, or at least prior important in terms of sequence, than customer experience. If your people are burned out, do you think they're going to have a nice tone of voice with your employees? I mean, with your customers? I absolutely guarantee that you need to pay attention to the humans and not just to optimizing productivity in a robot calculation.
Yeah, I might start a job helping people integrate technology into their service industry, simply because if you do it right, you can start with the premise of how do we engage this technology to maximize the customer experience? Because no customer was ever happy to say, oh, now I get to talk to a machine. Great. Yeah. I don't want to talk to Bob. You know, I want to talk to a machine.
Well, how many times do they all say they don't like your ticketing system? They don't like the automated responses. Like,
So part of that is the way that you have implemented it. I never had a client complain about my ticketing system. I only had a client complain about feeling like they weren't being heard. Right.
So you have now made the ending point to all of this discussion. It's the repercussions of these decisions. We're not advocating like, oh, don't let the robots in, don't let the data in, don't let the algorithm in. What we're saying is you have to think through the way the people in the system are treated. And if right. you don't think about that, you are going to have a bunch of unintended consequences, and they will not be good ones.
Very good. So that is it for this show. I do want to ask, so what are you doing next week, Dave? You just going to polish the furniture or?
Of course. Everything's shutting down.
I know you're not going to Europe.
So from my perspective, obviously doing more podcasts, I'm doing live streams and having interesting conversations about how we can do stuff online. There's a lot of really interesting ways. Those that have been watching know I've been doing all kinds of cool stuff with multi-camera and multi-location. You know, there's a lot of things that are interesting happening out there, and I'd love to have conversations more with people that need help with that.
How about you, Ryan?
So I got no multi-camera, no cool technology application. But what I am
no backlighting.
What I am doing is prepping for the first of our repurposed online conferences that I was going to be at physically. And, there are some people who are doing this just in a, talk to your microphone and click through some PowerPoint slides, and we'll call that an online conference. And then there are others who are doing this very, very well. Live video and the interactive capabilities of a legitimate virtual conference environment. This one is like that. And it is, I gotta say, it's inconvenient to be disrupted. But what we are learning with this new platform and with the way this technology conference is being repurposed, it's kind of cool. It's actually got some really interesting stuff that will surely outlive all of the travel restrictions.
Right. As for me, I'm just lucky that I had planned an online conference from day one. So getting ready for that. And we're going to start pumping up the marketing for that. And just so everybody knows, we're going to do a Killing It live at the SMB online conference. So stay tuned for that.
And we have some cool ideas for doing Killing It Live. So stay tuned. We may have, and vendors call me because let me talk to you about how cool this is.
Exactly. We got all kinds of fun stuff happening the rest of the year. So that will do it for episode 51 of the Killing It
Podcast.
Much better timing that time.
I knew it was coming.